parsha. This parsha, Nikkeit, page 222. Last week's parsha ends with Yosef interpreting the dreams of the wine butler and the baker of Paro. He interprets their dreams are fulfilled. He asked the Sar HaMashkim, he asked the wine butler to remember him when he would return to his position. And last week's parsha ends off at the Sar HaMashkim, the wine butler, forgot about Yosef. So this week's parsha begins by Himi Ketchna Sayim Yamin, and it was at the end of 2 years. Ufar Chaylein, Pari had a dream, the Inei made Al Ya'ar, and behold, he was standing by the Nile. Now, 2 years later is when Pari has his dream, which is through which Yosef gets out of jail and eventually becomes the viceroy of Egypt. So the Medrash comments on this whole episode of Yosef. How he had asked the Sar HaMashkim to remember him, how the HaMashkim forgot him for 2 years because of that, and now he's remembered. So the Medrash quotes a pasuk. The pasuk is a pasuk in Tehillim. Ashrei ha-gever shesam Hashem miftachai. Fortunate is the man who has made Hashem his trust. V'loi paneh el rehavim. He does not turn to the arrogant. So the Medrash says, the first half of the pasuk, fortunate is the man that has made Hashem his trust. Who is that referring to? That's referring to Yosef. V'loi paneh el rehavim. He did not turn to the arrogant. The Medrash says that through the fact that he asked the Sar HaMashkim to remember him, he had 2 more years added to his stay in prison. Now, this Medrash doesn't make any sense. Because if Yosef is now had to stay 2 more years in jail because of the fact that he asked the Sar HaMashkim to remember him, then that would mean that it was wrong for him to do so. So how does the Medrash apply the pasuk of fortune is the man that puts his trust in Hashem? This is Yosef, and he didn't turn to the arrogant, because Yosef asked the Sar HaMashkim for 2 more years to remember him. He got stuck there in jail for 2 more years. So Yosef is doing what the pasuk is not saying, seemingly, because Yosef is not putting his trust in Hashem, and that's why he's stuck in jail for 2 more years. So why is the Medrash saying that the example of the person who puts his trust in Hashem and doesn't turn to the arrogant, Zay Yosef, just referring to Yosef, where Yosef seemingly was punished for not doing that? So the Beis HaLevi explains like this. Beis HaLevi explains that in essence, you know, there's a big discussion, we discussed this beforehand, the Beis HaLevi works with the premise that in essence, a person should really just put his full trust in Hashem, put his full betachin in Hashem, and just hand everything over to Hashem. You know, everything is in the hands of Hashem. If he decides that I should have, he will give me what I need. If he decides that I shouldn't have what I'm going to, in fact, that I shouldn't have, no matter how much I try, I'm not going to have. And therefore, in essence, a person could really, if they can truly and sincerely reach that level, they should be able to say, I put myself in Hashem's hands completely, and that's it. I don't need to do anything. In essence, that is what a person, through the power of betachin, should be able to do. A person who is really at the highest level of betachin, the level of betachin at its highest, what does it demand of a person? Demands of a person to put their complete trust in Hashem, and that's it. However, says the Beis HaLevi, that doesn't work for us. It doesn't work for most people. Most people are not able to do that. Most people, because they're human beings and they're used to a natural world that has a process by which things happen, is used to that and isn't able to break out of that. It's very difficult to be able to break out of that routine, so to speak, out of that process that we're so used to in the natural world, and say, you know what, I won't engage in that process, and Hashem will somehow or another make that process work for me. That's something that's very hard for us to do. And therefore, the permission that we're granted to do hishtadlus, to put our efforts to engage in the natural process of things, is actually there to help us get to putting our trust in Hashem. Meaning, what happens is that when I have permission to put my effort and to do my hishtadlus, what that does is, it basically says to I say to myself, okay, I have engaged in the natural process, but I know that really this natural process isn't what makes things happen. It's really Hashem that makes it happen. But I have a very difficult time getting to that point of putting my trust in Hashem and working and internalizing that ultimately it's all Him and what I do doesn't make a difference. It's very hard for me to get there unless I actually engage in the process that seems to be the process that does make the difference. Because I'm a human being and I'm used to a natural world and to a process. And if I engage in that process, after I've engaged in that process and so to speak, I've calmed my nerves, then I have the ability to work on internalizing that what I've just done makes no difference. It's all Hashem. But I can't get there without engaging the natural process. So in essence, I'm really supposed to put my trust in Hashem, but I can't get to putting my trust in Hashem unless I engage in the natural process of things. Now, depending on who I am, everybody's different, says the Beis HaLevi. Some people are able to put their trust in Hashem more than others. Some people, so to speak, are more comfortable with that. They're able to actually be at peace in putting their trust in Hashem and doing less. So depending on you, on who you are, that's how much hishtadlus, that's how much effort you're permitted to do. If you're a person that's on a high level of trust in Hashem, you have the ability to put more trust in Hashem, then you should be doing less. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to cut off everything because you're not there. You can't just cut off. You need to somehow or another, emotionally, psychologically, you need to partake somewhat in that process to kind of calm yourself down and to say, okay, with this, what I just did, you know, after I've done this, it makes this little bit that I did makes it a little bit more plausible that it should happen, and then I'll be able to put my trust in Hashem on a pretty high level. Because the little bit that I'm doing, one could argue, is not something that, based on the normal process, is enough. But depending on what level I am at in my trust in Hashem, I'm going to have to do something, even if a little bit, to be able to be comfortable and to be calm and to be able to put my full trust in, to put my trust in Hashem the rest of the way and put it all in His hands, in which I actually am calm and cool. I know I'm in the hands of Hashem, but I can only get there if I do something. Some people have to do more, some people have to do less. But there's sometimes you have to do something. If I do that, now, if let's say I'm at a level that I should be putting more trust in Hashem and putting in less effort, and I overdo the effort, then I'm responsible for that. Then in essence, then potentially, if I've been putting myself in a situation where Hashem says to me, you're overdoing it, I'll give you a reason to overdo it. You won't be able to attain what you need unless you do more. That is what potentially could happen when a person goes beyond the efforts they should be doing. So if a person is at a level where, for instance, they should be able to say, okay, you know what? Every morning in the hour, I'm going to set myself a time to learn, and then I'm going to go to work. Okay? If a person is at that level, if a person could do such a thing, and he's capable of doing such a thing, he's got the freedom to do such a thing, okay? Let's imagine he has the freedom, right? He's got his own business. And he's going to decide, I'm going to open up the business an hour later so that I can study for an hour every morning. Okay? If a person is truly holding by that, and they don't do that, meaning they would be able to cut off an hour of their day of work and learn. And they can handle it. And they could say, you know, I put my trust in Hashem that this hour is not going to hurt me. And if they actually could do that and they don't do that, then that means they have overdone their hishtadlus. But if, let's say, you have a person who, let's say, you know, wants to consider 3 hours a day. Ooh, 3 hours a day, that's a big chunk of the day. That's already something that a person may not be able to handle, the idea of saying, you know what, I know it's all in Hashem's hands, 3 hours a day, I'll be fine, I put my trust in Hashem. And it's possible it could work, right? It could work. You can knock 3 hours out of your work day, and Hashem can still make it happen that the rest of the day your efforts bear fruit enough for what you need. But again, you may have a person that some people can handle it, some people can't. And if you're a person who can handle that, then for you, you're allowed to engage in those efforts that will allow you to get to a point where you can feel secure in putting your trust in Hashem in that which you're doing. So it all depends who you are. Depending who you are, depending on your level of trust in Hashem, that's going to make the difference of how much hishtadlus, how much effort you should be putting into what you're doing. Okay, is that understood? Now, Yosef found himself in a situation where he had a chance to engage in some hishtadlus and some effort, and he was able to, and he was going to, and he says to the Sarah Mashkim, to the wine butler, remember me. Make mention of me for Paro that I should be able to get out of here. Okay? Is that a lot of hishtablis? Has he overdone it? He hasn't really done much. Just asking for a favor. Okay? Will he do the favor? Won't he do the favor? He doesn't know. But he's just asking for a favor. So it would seem that Yosef isn't overdoing his hishtablis, isn't overdoing his efforts. But it also means that Yosef is assuming that he needs to do this. Yosef is assuming that he can't just go ahead and forget about trying, about putting his efforts and putting his complete trust in Hashem. That's what he's assuming about himself. Because if he would assume that he didn't need that, he wouldn't have done it. So Yosef surmised that his level was that some level of effort has to put in. Because otherwise, if he doesn't put some, even a little bit of effort in, he's not going to be able to be comfortable. He's not going to be able to put his trust in Hashem comfortably and sincerely. Hashem said to him, you misjudged yourself. You misjudged yourself. You should have, Yosef, for who you are and what you've been through, you should have been able to have completely put your trust in Hashem and say, I am completely in Hashem's hands. I can be rest assured that Hashem will take care of me. How? I don't know. It's not my problem.
Maybe he was assuming that Hashem placed in his hands the opportunity.
Well, apparently the Medrash doesn't say that.
Okay.
The Medrash doesn't say that.
Huh.
The Medrash is saying,
know what to do.
If that's something every person has to be able to be, to look at themselves and constantly be looking at themselves and saying, you know, is this what I should be doing? Yosef was at a point he had to decide, is he going to put his full trust in Hashem? Is he going to put the effort? He decided, I'll put the effort. We should assume that he did that thinking or assuming this is what he needed to do. And Hashem says to him, no, you're not on that. You're at a higher level. You're better than that. And because of the fact that you're better than that, therefore what you did was overdoing it, and therefore the next 2 years would be a process by which you would have to work on being able to put your full trust in Hashem. Which is something that Yosef did. Paro calls him to interpret a dream. Paro says, I understand, you know how to interpret dreams. And what does Yosef say? Not me. That's not a smart way of doing things in front of the king. You know, hishtadlus, working in the natural process, would not work that way. You don't say to the king, who says, I understand that you how to interpret dreams, and he's clearly not a believer, in, you wouldn't assume he's a believer in God, and you turn to him and say, no, it's not me, it's God.
Is that because he felt he didn't know for 2 years?
Yosef understood that now what he has to do is he has to put himself completely in Hashem's hands,
mm-hmm.
not be scared, and do the right thing. Will it mess him up? Will it mess him up? He's in Hashem's hands. Hashem's hands doesn't make a difference. But according to what Beis HaLevi is learning, Yosef's mistake was that Yosef should have understood that he does not need to engage in any kind of effort. He is able to be that person to completely put his trust in Hashem without engaging in the natural process. He doesn't need that. Other people need that to some degree, even in a small degree. Because otherwise, they're just not going to be comfortable. They won't be able to put themselves at ease and say, I am in Hashem's hands. But Yosef is at that level where he should have been able to have said that. He didn't do so, and therefore he had 2 years to have to make that up. Now, there's another medrash that says, I was not able to find that medrash, but I saw this medrash brought down, have it written down, where the medrash says that during these 2 years, every night, Paro dreamt the dream that we read about in this week's parasha, but he forgot it each night. 2 years later, he finally had the dream, and he finally remembered it. What's the point of that? So I saw that the point of that is, the medrash is trying to tell us that during those 2 years, Yosef worked on building up his trust in Hashem again. Yosef was working on rectifying what he did wrong. And the fact that Paro has the dream every night is a sign that Yosef is getting closer and closer to the point of how he will eventually be able to get out of jail without any of his efforts. Yosef has 2 years to make up for what he did. And each day and each night, he's working more and more. And the more he works, the closer he's getting to the point that he will have rectified what he did wrong and be able to get out. Our sages are telling us, by telling us that Paro had the dream every night and he forgot it, that Yosef was working, and every day he was rectifying, getting closer to the point of where he actually would get out.
But he had to wait. He needed 2 years to get to that point.
That's what that's what the Medrash is telling us. He needed 2 years to get to that point. He needed 2 years to rectify what he did wrong. It's a good question. You know, you could ask him, you know, why 2 years? That long? We don't know. But one thing I will say is that the Nefesh HaChaim says that the greater the person is, the more when he does things wrong, the more damage he sees, so to speak, does in higher worlds, and sometimes needs more work there, and thus would need more work to make it up. Even though it would seem that, you know, how much a mistake was this? You need 2 years? Hashem knows how much damage comes from a righteous, from a great person's mistake in the higher worlds, and therefore it could take time to rectify that. But the Medrash telling us that every night Paro had the dream is right to tell us that Yosef worked for 2 years on getting to where he needed to go. Each day brought him closer to the dream that would eventually free him. Now there's another Medrash here, and again, this point of Yosef getting out on the words Vayi Mikach Nasayam Yamim Paro Chaylem, and it was at the end of 2 years and Paro had a dream. The Medrash says, Ahu Techsiv, this is what it means, that which is written, Keitz Sam L'Cheshech. Hashem set an end to the darkness. What is that referring to? Keitz Sham L'Yosef. Hashem had designated an end time. Kamayiya Bebeis HaSurim, how long would he be in jail? Hashem made a time, 2 years. Kevin Shigia HaKeitz, once the end came, Upara Chaylem, Para had the dream. When it says at the end of 2 years, Paro had a dream, says the Medrash, that means to say 2 years was the time span that Hashem gave for Yosef to be in jail. Once the 2 years were up, Paro had a dream. Says the Beis Halevi, the Medrash is teaching us like this. Everything in our world has a cause and an effect. Right? And if we were to ask the question, what was the cause of Yosef getting out of jail? We might say the cause was Paro's dream. Paro has a dream, Yosef interprets the dream, and now Yosef gets out. So the cause was the dream, and what was the effect? That Yosef is able to get out of jail. Says the Medrash, no, you've got the order the wrong way. It's not that the cause is the dream, and the effect is Yosef gets out of jail. Actually, the cause is Yosef has to get out of jail. And what is that? What's the effect of that? Paro has a dream. That's why Paro is having the dream. Paro is having the dream so that Yosef now can get out. Yosef had 2 years to make up. He made up in those 2 years. Once the 2 years are over, Paro has a dream. The cause and effect that what we sometimes think is the cause and the effect could be the opposite way around. It's really because of the fact that what Hashem wants should come about, that therefore the effect of that is what appears to be the means to the effect of what happens in real life, so to speak. But really, it's really the opposite way around. Of course, at the end of the day, the means by which Yosef gets out of jail is the dream. But the dream is not the cause. The cause is Hashem's decree that Yosef has to get out. And once the time for that decree comes, then we get the process going. Then the means comes about by which to bring about the fulfillment of Hashem's decree. But what we tend to think is the cause and the effect could actually be the opposite way around. The cause is Hashem's decree. The effect of that is the means by which to bring its fulfillment. In this case, the real cause was the time for Yosef to get out of jail, and the effect was the fact that Yosef, that Paro should now have a dream.
What about Yaakov? He was sort of enslaved for 14 years. Would that be the same thing, you could say?
And how would you say that?
Well, basically, he was a son of Laban. He was a slave for 14 years. Was he, because he wasn't right the way he got his birth?
I've never seen that as a connection. So, you know, again, here we have the connection. The Medrash is telling us we have that connection, which is that it's time for Yosef to get out, therefore Paro has a dream. It's not the other way around. And really, this has to be the way we look at a lot of things in life, that what we think is the cause and the effect could actually be the other way around. The real cause for everything is Hashem's decree. and because of Hashem's decree has to be fulfilled, the effect is the means by which to bring about that fulfillment. Okay. Let's take a little time now to speak about Hanukkah. Okay. Now, so Mordechai's back, right? And you know, I don't know if you know about you know Mordechai is an athlete, right? He's an athlete. He's a built guy. He's an athlete. Okay. Now, do you think? What do you think? Do you think Yehuda Maccabee looked like him?
It's crying.
What do you think? A lot of times when we see pictures, when Yehuda Maccabee is depicted, the Maccabee and the Hashmonai are depicted, they're all, you know, brawny, they all look like linebackers, you know, they're all big guys, right? The thing is that in Al HaNisim, what do we say? In Al HaNisim we say, Masarta Gibrayim B'yad Chaloshim. You handed over the mighty in the hands of the weak. So, they're called weak. Well, maybe you'll say, well, maybe they were really strong, but they were so outnumbered that no matter how strong you are, if you're outnumbered, you're outnumbered.
But then they go on hand to the few.
But the answer is, that should fall into the next part of what we say, Rabin Miyatim, the many in the hands of the few. If that's what it's all about, then we don't need to say anything about the weak and the mighty. And therefore, from the prayer of Al-Adisim, our assumption should be that, yes, Yehuda Maccabee was scrawny. Okay, he was scrawny. However, his ability to be able to really fight, he was chalash, they were weak. But their success in their wars against the Yevanim was a miracle. It was a miracle. And it was a miracle that came about through their mesiras nefesh, their dedication. The fact that they were ready now to give up their lives to bring the worship of the Beis HaMikdash and the service of Hashem back to the Jewish people, the fact that they were ready now to devote and even give up their lives for that, that was the means by which Hashem then gave them the ability and the strength to succeed. Now, Rabbi Tzion Salomon cites something called Megillas Antiochus. I don't know if you ever heard of it. Megillas Antiochus. Megillas Antiochus is not in Tanakh. It's not like Megillas Esther. And the truth is, it's not exactly clear who wrote it. It could have been written in the times of the Hashmonaim. Maybe it was written later. But it's never been considered, it's not one of the books of Tanakh. Okay? I don't think it has any mention anywhere, it has no mention anywhere in the Gemara. I don't even think it has much mention in any Halachas Svarim. So it's not, what?
We don't read it,
even though I did see somewhere there were communities who used to read it Shabbos Hanukkah.
Yeah.
There were some communities that did that. But again, it's something that, you know, to some degree we may refer to, historically refer to gain a little bit, to a glimpse of what's going on, but I don't know if we don't consider it authoritative. Okay? At the same time, there are some insights to glean from there. So in the Megillas Antiochus it says that Antiochus sent out a general called Bagris. And when Bagris lost the battle, the way he brings down here is B'nai Matisyo, right? When the sons of Matisyo beat Bagris, and he escaped the battlefield, and he ran back to Antiochus, so he said to Antiochus, Ata HaMelech, you the king, Samta Tzivu Levatam and Yehudim, you decreed to take away from the Jewish people Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, Umila, you decreed to take away all these mitzvahs. Mirma Gadol L'Mered B'Seicha, you've made a big mistake. Asher im yelchu kol ha'amim va'umais, because if all nations and if all people and nations, balashenis and languages, lo yuchal lachamish b'nei Matisyo, if all the nations would come, they would not be able to overpower the sons of Matisyo. Me arayis hem chazakim, they're stronger than lions. Me nesharim hem kalim, they're swifter than eagles. Me dudim hem maharim, they're quicker than bears. So we got here a first-hand eyewitness report, okay, of what the Hashmonaim seem to have been. Stronger than lions, swifter than eagles. So, I mean, we don't have to necessarily listen to Megillas Antiochus, but, you know, is it a contradiction to what we say in Al HaNisim of Masarti Gibran B'Yad Chaloshim, you gave over the mighty in the hands of the weak? And Rebbe Tzion explains, no. Because Bagris only saw one thing. He only saw might. He only saw their military prowess. They may look scrawny, right? But he saw what they were doing. And he saw how successful they were being. Okay, well, in his mind, in his Greek mind, these guys are powerful. How they're powerful, I don't know how they're powerful, but they're powerful. Somehow or another, they're mightier than lions, they're swifter than eagles. But what he didn't realize was the true source of their strength. The true source of their strength was not physical, but it was spiritual. It was the miracles and it was the miraculous power that Hashem had given them because of their Mesiras Nefesh, because of their dedication to the highest degree. And when we use that word Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, of course the highest form of self-sacrifice is to be ready to give up your life for something, which is what the Chashmonaim were ready to do. And that's how they brought about the Hanukkah miracle. But the definition of Mesiras Nefesh, the definition of self-sacrifice is whenever you go against your natural tendencies that push you away from serving Hashem, your natural tendencies that say serve yourself and not serve Hashem, anytime you overpower those tendencies, that is essentially Mesiras Nefesh. That's the essential Mesiras Nefesh. The essential self-sacrifice is going against your natural tendencies that push you away from serving Hashem. That's what it is. And that is what the lesson of Hanukkah is in regard to what we have to do on Hanukkah. What lessons do we take from Hanukkah? We take from Hanukkah the lesson of being ready to give up, to be truly dedicated, give up ourselves to the service of Hashem. Let me conclude with a story of a contemporary Maccabee, a contemporary Maccabee. Yosef Mendelevich, ever heard of him? Russian refusnik. Famous man. Famous for his years in jail and being an observant Jew to the best of his ability while he was in jail. And the unbelievable stories of what he went through. So there's a story about when he was in jail and he calculated with Hanukkah. He was trying to figure out how is he going to do the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. So he was able to get a guard to give him a match. Okay, so he had a match, all right? Step number one. Okay, now he needed wicks and oil. Wicks, he pulled out some threads from his prison clothing, right? And he spun it together, he had a wick. But now he needs fuel. Or something, he needs some kind of fuel. Not happening. Can't find. A little bit of time that they let him out of his solitary confinement, not enough time to work things out. Hanukkah is getting closer and closer. It's the night of Hanukkah. He's basically given up. But then he says to himself, I may not be able to fulfill the mitzvah fully, but I'm going to do something of the mitzvah. So he takes a rock, and he goes over to the wall, and he scratches out a menorah in the wall. Scratches out a base and 8 candles. And he puts one of the candles by a crack. And he takes the wick that he made, and he sticks it into the crack. So now the wick is above one of the candles that he engraved into the wall. Then he took his match, he struck it on the wall, says he made a bracha. Okay, that's as much as he knew then. He made a bracha, and he lit the wick. And the wick lasted for how long when you do that?
A second or two.
No, I didn't have any faith. Okay, it didn't last too long. It lasted a second or two. But for him, he did it. For him, he did it. He was going to light it. It lit for 2 seconds. You know, when you light a wick and it burns down, it's gone. But he did what he could do. Whatever he could do, and he wouldn't give up. Although everything around him said, forget about it, he wouldn't do that. That's Mesiras Nefesh. And they write here how a young girl, when he one time was relating his story, she asked him, why did you keep mitzvahs under these difficult circumstances? Why'd you do it? His answer was, can you tell a tree to stop growing? If a tree doesn't grow, what is it?
Dead.
And if you are alive, truly alive, which means living a life of Torah and serving Hashem, if you're really alive, you don't stop. You don't stop. Because if you stop, then you're killing yourself. That is what Yosef Mendelevich understood. That's what the Chashmonaim understood. They came, they understood, as the Bach, the commentary of the Bach says, at one point the Jewish people were somewhat lackadaisical, they were lax in their performance of the service of Hashem. They were not enthusiastic, not excited. They were lax about it. And Hashem said, "You don't care about serving me? You're not going to be able to." The Chashmonaim then went and showed Hashem and showed the Jewish people what it takes to serve Hashem. They had to show what the service of Hashem means. They had to show that they were ready to give up their lives to serve Hashem. They had to show how important service of Hashem was. But how does that happen? How does it? What is it within a person that makes them ready to give up everything to serve Hashem? It's because they realize if they can't serve Hashem, that they're dead. They have nothing. That's what the Chashmonaim understood, and that's what they taught us on Hanukkah.